standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents, but the voices are gone. She cannot understand. She's young girl, she's alone. There is blood on her hands, but it's not her fault. Not her fight, not her war. She's too Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. Now, what does the sudden fall of dictatorships in the Middle East and North Africa mean to the 4.5 million Palestinians struggling to survive under Israeli occupation? This week, a first symbolic bag of cement finally arrived in the Gaza Strip, intended to herald a new age of cooperation between the Egyptians at El Arish and the Gazan government. But at the same time, an increasing number of missiles were launched by Israel at the battered Gazan infrastructure as we looked at Libya. Today, my guests, a musician and a Palestinian activist, discuss these events. Here's an overview of today's theme.
Following uprisings in the Middle East and North Africa, the spotlight has fallen repeatedly on Palestine. Pro-Palestinian activists are demanding that the deeply oppressed people of Palestine be heard. As the fever of revolution sweeps across the Arab world, tens of thousands of Palestinians have taken to the streets to celebrate the courage of people power in the face of injustice. There was chanting and cheering in Hebron, Nablus, Nazareth and Ramallah after the resignation of Egypt's Hosni Mubarak. The energy was high and the spirit of the youth unmistakable. But this renewed hope stretches far beyond Palestine to activists across the globe who, through music, cultural boycott, plans for flotilla or protests, are part of a new wave of resistance.
Well, my first guest today is Dave Randall, a musician best known for his work with the hugely successful band Faithless. In 2010, Faithless refused to play in Israel. And last month, the band did play in South Africa, having refused to play there under apartheid 20 years ago. So Dave Randall is a musician with a conscience, and I welcome you to Remember Palestine, a programme with a conscience. Did you like what I did there?
Very clever.
But wasn't that good? You've been playing music for 20 years. You've been with Faithless for...
Actually, not quite. Yeah, we've been together for just over 15 years. Okay. So we didn't get the chance to boycott South Africa in the bad old days, but had we have had the chance, we would have done.
So your stance was that I would never have played there if we'd have been a big band then. That was what you said.
I think that the cultural boycott contributed to the downfall of apartheid then, and I think it plays a very important part now in the struggle against what I would call Israeli apartheid.
Let's back up a bit. How does a musician with a comfortable life and an uncomfortable touring schedule get involved in the question of Palestine?
Well, it was the touring schedule, actually, initially. Faithless first went to Israel, I think, in 97, certainly long enough ago for me to be vague about that, possibly 99. But we had a day off, and a lot of the band just sort of had a look around Tel Aviv. But I decided to jump on a bus and make the long and then difficult, now much more difficult, journey into Gaza. Mm. I decided to go and have a look at Gaza City. And I think that when you see for yourself, I mean, I've been back subsequently and I've also been to the West Bank. And when you see with your own eyes the sort of humiliations that the Palestinians are subjected to routinely, when you see that for yourself, I think it affects you quite profoundly. And I came away thinking I need to try to do something, however small, to show my solidarity with the Palestinian people.
How hard was it to talk other band members into making a stance? Because let's talk a little bit about the music industry in Israel, if we can. Is it hard is there pressure on people not to speak out against Israel, would you say?
Yes, there is. And I think this is an important point because I remember reading a piece in one of the newspapers around the time that Elvis Costello had joined the cultural boycott and had written a very good statement explaining why, One of the pieces in the newspapers said that he'd only done so and that other musicians had only joined the cultural boycott under pressure from activists. Mm. Now, I would say two things to that. Firstly, if that's true, good on the activists. Mm. But secondly, my experience is quite the opposite. My experience is that it's a very hard-fought position. It's hard to win that position when you're subject to pressure from people in the music industry. In other words, it was quite a controversial decision, both within the band and certainly with the music industry more broadly. And not everyone in the band agrees with the fact that Faith has joined the cultural boycott, mm. but the majority of us mm. did. And I'm very pleased to say that that's the position that we took. And Maxi Jazz, of course, our frontman, published a very good statement explaining his position.
Are you seeing a growth then in bands joining the cultural boycott, some quietly and some more noisily? Do you think there's been a change in the last 10 years?
Certainly, I do. I mean, the most significant change, of course, was in 2005 when Palestinian civil society clearly asked international artists to stay away as part of a broader boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign. And so when the people on the receiving end, on the sharp end of an oppressive regime, ask you to stay away as an act of solidarity in order to bring pressure to bear upon the Israeli state, well, I think you have to listen and take that call seriously. But I think that people are starting to gain confidence now. There's still nervousness about being seen to be a critic of the state of Israel, but I think that more and more people are gaining confidence to say that actually this is a human rights issue, pure and simple. This is at least as bad as apartheid in the bad old days. And actually, there's a moral obligation on all of us to speak out.
Well, we'll be coming back to the comparatives between Israel and South African apartheid and some work you've been doing on that in just a moment. But first, let's have a look at an advert that Dave has helped to create to support South African artists against apartheid.
Hi, I'm Dave Randall from Faithless. 20 years ago, I would not have played in apartheid South Africa. Today, I refuse to play in Israel. Be on the right side of history. Don't entertain apartheid. Join the international boycott of Israel. I support South African artists against apartheid.com.
Okay, South African artists, we were seeing there against apartheid. Mm. People watching might say apartheid's dead. What apartheid?
Well, they might say that, but they should read the very moving words of Archbishop Desmond Tutu after he got back from a visit to the West Bank last year. They should also, if they're interested so to do, listen to the words of former President Jimmy Carter, or the leader of COSATU, the trade union movement in South Africa, or any number of other people who have drawn the same conclusion that I have, that it's at least as bad as apartheid South Africa. Now, it's different. It's not the same in every respect, but it's at least as bad, and therefore the obligation on people in the international, in the world outside of Israel, the obligation on us to take that seriously and to do what we can to make a difference in that situation, I think is very significant.
You know, it's interesting because South Africa traditionally had a strong, post-colonial friendship yeah. with Israel along the same kind of separatist agendas. And now right. a growing community there saying, no, we have to boycott Israel. What were the musicians out there telling you?
Well, the musicians, I think, I mean, there's a discussion going on in South Africa, of course, in the same way that there is in Europe and North America and everywhere else. Some musicians think that it's better to go, despite the effectiveness of the cultural boycott in the past, in South Africa itself. Others are becoming very confident and vocal supporters of the boycott, which is, I think, the right position. The reason why I think it's particularly important in the case of Israel is this, that South African apartheid was defeated really by a Pinza movement, of the international movement, a BDS movement, very similar to the one that we support with regard to Israel now, plus, of course, the actions of South Africans themselves resisting oppression. Mm. And one of the most important things that the South Africans themselves did was they went on strike. When the black workers in South Africa went on strike in the 1980s, that really rocked the regime. Mm. Now, Palestinians are largely excluded from the Israeli economy, and therefore that's not an option in the same way for Palestinians. So therefore it's even more important that we on the outside do something.
Do you have a theory as to why people on the outside aren't getting the similarities and the painful lifestyle of the Palestinians in the way that we could touch the South African problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that we presented the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians is very distorted. We're constantly given the impression, I mean, this is changing recently, but we have quite often been given the impression that this is some sort of intractable conflict between two equals. In fact, it's nothing of the sort. This is one Western-backed, heavily armed and well-funded state illegally occupying a displaced and impoverished people. And I think we need to be absolutely clear about that. But until you've sort of dug beneath the surface, until you've looked into it for yourself, I think it's very easy to have the wrong impression.
And you yourself, you've written several songs about Palestine, and you're in the process of writing one now. Let's tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's not released for a little while. We're going to release it at the beginning of July, but it's a song which features a number of different artists. It was inspired, actually, by an anti-apartheid anthem, in my opinion, written by Jerry Dammers, the song Free Nelson Mandela. So I've tried to write a song. I mean, I wish I was as talented as Jerry Dammers. I'm not. But nonetheless, I've tried to write a song in the spirit of Free Nelson Mandela, but with the chorus Freedom for Palestine. And we've made some other links with the anti-apartheid struggle. We've got a gospel choir from South Africa on the choruses of that song. So, yeah, it's an exciting project.
And how far to go with that? That launches this year and then a tour?
Oh, I don't think we'll be touring the song. We'll see. We'll see what comes of it. Our intention, or our what we're going to try to do, is really use the song as a campaign tool to give people confidence to speak up about this issue. And perhaps for people who don't know anything about it, the song will get them interested in the issue. In the same way that Free Nelson Mandela got me interested in that issue when I was a teenager. Mm. I think that was probably the first time I heard the name Nelson Mandela was in the Special AKA song.
What a great project.
So, it can have an impact.
Dave Randall, thanks very much for coming on to Remember Palestine. Tell all your music friends about us, okay?
Will do.
Thank you. So, how have Gazans responded to the protests in the Middle East and North Africa? Our own Yusuf Al-Halou gets the word on the street from the Palestinian community following the revolutionary events of recent weeks.
A sense of renewed hope is spreading across Palestine following the anti-government protests in other parts of the Arab world. When the news broke out that Hosni Mubarak had resigned, Palestinians took to the streets throughout Gaza to rejoice with their Egyptian brothers and sisters and international campaigners. People chanted, "Respects from Palestine to the people of Tunis and Egypt. You are leading the revolution." And with the protests having spread to Libya, Yemen and Bahrain, the fever of anticipation in Palestine, especially amongst the youth, is growing.
Palestinians here say the success of the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions has planted the seeds in their hearts that they too one day can be free without Israeli occupation, siege or internal division.
I asked young people in Gaza about how the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions inspired them and what they anticipate now, given the decades of Israeli occupation, years of siege and internal division, and the quest for freedom.
As a youth, I would say I'm working more on my dream to come true, especially after what happened in 2008, the war here in Gaza, which basically not only damaged the land, it damaged our dreams that we will never have our own land back. But now, after what happens in the Arab world, that makes us know we're part of this Arab world. We can make the change.
I'm very happy for what's happening in the Middle East and Egypt and Tunisia, because it's the sound of people. They would like to have a change in their life.
Only us, we have the ability to do it. We have to change many, many things, from the apartheid wall, the illegal settlement construction, the so-called peace process that is getting nothing but more losses to the Palestinian cause.
International peace activists in Gaza also say that what happened is an inspiration to them. More aid convoys and aid flotillas are expected to be sent to Gaza in late April and May to break the ongoing Israeli land and sea blockade.
Of course, it's massively inspiring to all the movements around the world. It's making people say, wow, if these are people who are going to this extent for freedom, for things we believe in, for human rights, for democracy, then what? Well, we've got more space. We've got more space to operate in. We've got more liberties. We have to use that to make sure that justice continues to happen in this region.
For the Palestinians who have been living under Israeli occupation for over six decades, these popular uprisings and revolutions could mean that the change is possible, because they believe that the will of the people can defeat all shapes of dictatorship. Yusuf Al-Hilo, reporting from Remember Palestine, Gaza.
Many thanks to Yusuf for that report. Now, joining me down the line from Vienna, where he is attending a conference on the rights of the Palestinian people, is Mr. Salah Hijazi. Salah Hijazi is from Ramallah. He studied philosophy, politics and conflict resolution at the US. He has worked as PR officer for the Office of the Ministry of Planning in Ramallah, Palestine. His special academic interest remains Palestinian activism and resistance. Welcome to RP, Salah Hijazi.
Thank you, Lauren.
Please tell us about the UN conference you're attending now.
Well, I'm here for a conference on the question of Palestine, or the conference of the Committee for the Palestinian Exercise of Their Inalienable Rights, with a special focus in this meeting on Palestinian political prisoners.
And what is the objective? Because there's one of the criticisms of the UN and such bodies is there's always a lot of talk or a lot of process and very little peace. Is there an objective to this?
No, I recognize this. Of course, the objectives are not very clear, but I think it is good enough right now for the UN to recognize that Palestinians in Israeli jails, Israeli detention centers, are political prisoners. This is the first time that this committee and the UN has held a conference specifically focusing on this issue. As you know, and according to the Goldstone report, we have about 8,300 political prisoners in Israeli jails, around over 700,000 Palestinians have been in Israeli prisons since the occupation of Palestinian land in 1967. It's a huge issue. There are many intricate issues inside it, and it is, I think, an achievement, a good enough achievement that the UN has held the conference specifically on this issue.
So let's just say at some point in the future the UN recognizes that the majority or all perhaps of the Palestinian prisoners currently in Israeli jails are political prisoners. What difference will that make?
What difference would that make?
Yeah.
Well, it makes their plight, the support for their plight easier. People would start recognizing that this is arbitrary detention. This is not a rightful detention of people who are threatening the security of other people. These people are imprisoned because they're saying that they need the rights. They're acting to get the rights. They're struggling for freedom, democracy, and the human rights. These are not people who are carrying weapons and going on to shoot civilians. This old paradigm of that Israel has managed to present to the world that we're fighting the terrorists, we're protecting our security, is, I think, dissolving now. And this is what we hope from these kind of conferences.
Let's bring things right up to date now with the regime changes, for example, in Egypt. Whilst this has been going on, the attacks on Palestinians from Israeli jets, the central Gaza Strip damaged by airstrikes this week, fishermen in Gaza murdered by Israeli naval fishermen, and banks closing in Gaza, arbitrary arrests in the West Bank. Is Israel using this unrest as an opportunity for more activities that are illegal, do you think?
Well, this is not new, Lauren. I don't know if there's, the Israeli government meets and discusses what the media situation in the world is, but nothing new. The shelling of Gaza is not new. What is happening in the West Bank, and let me tell you a little bit more about, what's happening there with the targeting of communities who are involved in a popular nonviolent struggle against house demolitions, land confiscation, settlements. You know, there's an increase of targeting of children, where they arrest children from these communities in Silwan, Nabi Saleh, Bilayin, sometimes at 3 o'clock in the in the morning. There are also arrests of leaders of these popular nonviolent struggles. You may know Abdullah Abu Rahmeh, who's just in January, his sentence has been increased for to 16 months for no reason at all. Just yesterday, Najee Tamimi from Nabi Saleh has been arrested at night. I can't say that you know, this is taking advantage of you know, media focusing somewhere else. This is the regular that Palestinians see, you know,
face every day. Saleh Hijazi from Vienna, what you seem to be saying is business as usual with the Israelis against those who live in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, if you want to leave your comments, here's how to get in touch.
Now, don't forget, you can text the Remember Palestine team with your comments about the issues raised in today's programme on +44 78 00 000 377. You can also email us your comments, any interesting stories about Palestine, or even send us a 30-second message through your webcam to our email rp@presstv.co.uk. And don't forget, you can always add your comments on our Facebook wall, and even send any pictures, songs or videos you would like us to feature. We look forward to hearing from you.
OK, now let's have a look at what activists supporting Palestine have been doing recently to show their solidarity.
The chief organisers of Freedom Flotilla 2 met in Amsterdam last week to push ahead with plans for a voyage from the USA to Gaza this spring. The Freedom Flotilla Alliance has said this trip will include more than 20 countries, most of them from Europe, doubling the numbers previously involved. Coordinators have stressed the need for assistance in securing the safety of activists on board the fleet in preventing the recurrence of the attacks which plagued the first mission in May last year. The Freedom Flotilla will set sail in a new effort to break Israel's illegal 5-year siege on the Gaza Strip. Students from the UK will be heading to the West Bank later this month to show their solidarity with a university in Nablus. The students from De Montfort University in Leicester will film their trip, highlighting the difficulties the checkpoints create for pupils and document the impact of the separation wall. The week-long visit is part of a twinning initiative by the Palestine Peace Society, founded a year ago at De Montfort. They chose to go to Al-Najah University as it is one of the universities most affected by the separation wall, with around 50% of students needing to cross up to as many as 4 checkpoints to get to class. The Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions National Committee is calling on activists to mark Land Day by taking new action in support of Palestine. The Palestinian Land Day, on March the 30th, is the anniversary of Israeli forces shooting dead 6 young anti-government protesters in 1976 and has since become a symbol of resistance against the Zionist state. Activists are being urged to boycott Israeli products and services, pursue legal action towards ending Israel's impunity, and encourage artists to join the growing wave of cultural boycotting. The Land Day has been an annual global day of action since the attack on Gaza in 2008 and 2009.
Well, that's all we have time for on today's RP. I leave you with this from the American biochemist and sci-fi author Isaac Asimov. There are no nations, there is only humanity. And if we don't come to understand that soon, there will be no nations because there will be no humanity. That's all for this week. See you next time. Thank you.